Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
We just have a good rhythm together. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome along to The Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4, Episode 27. I'm Guy Montgomery. Tim Batt is frantically throwing back a piece of toast. Can you do a couple of chews close to the microphone, Tim, to prove to everyone I'm telling the truth? Oh yeah, that's enough.
That's grisly.
Now, I know you hate that. Although we were experimenting with ASMR recently. I am in Sydney, Australia. Tim, Auckland, New Zealand. I did the thing I actually chastised you for recently, Tim, wherein I put in an hour of solid work last night. Just trying to, you know, break this thing into digestible chunks or like, you know, and ensure that I had some semblance of life. It wasn't actually quite an hour. I went to bed. My goal was to make it to the wedding day. So I went to bed full of hope, full of promise, actually. I sort of saw a frame of Carrie emerging from her dressing room in her wedding dress, and I thought, oh, my God, you've got no fucking idea what's coming. And I went and tucked myself in and then got up, you know, to face just the absolute mess. Sort of, it's not a dissimilar feeling to... I don't know, like I've read about it in a book by John Ronson called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, where someone sends out a tweet thinking they're sending a funny tweet before a flight, and then they land and they're in the middle of a social media maelstrom, where, you know, I went to sleep thinking, well, Carrie, maybe this is the week, maybe this time things will work out. And I got up and, I mean, to no one's surprise, it was a mess. She got jilted once more, and then they just faffed around for another what? Hour and 45.
I love how you treat this media product, that it is an actual fact of play that you're attending twice weekly. Who's turned up, who's doing a good performance, how it stacks up against last week. Look, this isn't a new phenomenon, but it really does tickle me that you've persisted with this particular style of watch.
It's honestly a coping mechanism. If I believe there's the opportunity for deviation, the movie becomes slightly less haunting. And actually, I listened yesterday to a radio interview after you fired out a tweet.
Yes.
And quite a prominent New Zealand broadcaster actually went to the trouble of reaching out to you to make sure you were okay.
He did. I'm talking to you on the phone, so I can't pull up the tweet verbatim, but I basically said, I cannot bring myself to watch Sex and the City again. And Jesse Mulligan, who is the host of our 7 o'clock current events nightly show, and he's also a prominent radio person on our state broadcaster, he got one of his producers to get in touch and was basically just checking in to see how I was coping. So that was very nice. And in actual fact, I thought, Guy, with your permission, it might be... I might just tack that on the end of this episode or just fang it on so people can have a listen to that.
Oh, mate, fill your boots. The quality of these audio records and what goes out into the public sphere, as far as I'm concerned, is none of my business. Well, so, you know, you were in a despondent state. you know, I guess the mental preparation that you had to do heading into the watch this week, it looked like you were sort of not doing so well. How did you find the actual watch? What was the situation?
Really, really, really bad. And it's hard when you start to run out of language because it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a non-inflammatory example. I guess if you call someone an arsehole enough times and then they're being a real arsehole, it's like, what word do you have left, you know, to pull out of the bag? So I...
Well, do you know, in that situation, what you're describing, you would just cut that person out of your life. You'd stop talking to them. It's not that you'd need to delve deeper to find different language. You'd be like, well, this person obviously has no place in my life. Not an option.
The situation. Although for most people, I would say work would be the place where that happens and you can't just sort of cut your boss out, something like that. I'll give you a bit of context for my viewing, Monty, up top. So haven't been sleeping great lately, a combination of the humidity and this gorgeous wee pup who needs to go out to go to the toilet sort of two or three times a night. He's been quite sick recently as well, so we have to take him out, make sure he goes. He's been acting up a little bit and doing some less than solid, incredibly stinky poos inside, which is not good doggy behaviour. So we're just trying to get that trained out of him. And
isn't it? That's so much worse than a solid poo, isn't it?
Oh, the cleanup.
There's the cleanup's worse because you're actually dealing with the. If it's solid, you can just sort of pick it up with something between your fingers and the poo,
totally,
and distribute it no trouble. But if it's sloppy,
you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And the smell is very different for a sort of diarrhea style scenario. So with that in mind, my wife's usually been getting up. Zoe's been getting up to sort of look after this pooch. And I was like, you know, I'll take this one. And, you know, I don't know if everyone hears this. I am a very bad sleeper. I'm very bad at sleep. So I have a window and it's pretty small where I could go to sleep. And if I miss that window, I'm fucked. And for last night, that window was about sort of 10:30 p.m., which was about one third the way through my watch of the movie. So that window closed, that train sailed. And then I was just, I finished it like midnight-ish, something around there. And I was trying to just get off to sleep, and the dog started making a bit of noise because he's in a crate. So I let him out, and he just like in a split second ran under a desk in our bedroom and took a huge shit. And I was like, okay, good stuff. So then, you know, all this sort of accoutrement with that, and then, yeah. So anyway, all that to say, I've had 2 hours sleep, and the watch was absolutely ghastly. I couldn't believe it. Here was the big thought that was running through my head last night was, this doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just pixels on a screen now and random vibrations that are hitting my eardrums. There's no real meaning behind it, or there's nothing being transmitted to me. It's just static. I feel like an alien trying to interpret a radio signal that they don't have the equipment for.
What is undeniably a film that has been captured in both audio and visual, you know, like, I mean, I've watched it. I understand what you're articulating, but what I watched was definitely a coherent assembly of pictures and noises. It has been reduced to what? Just rubble, just white noise, digital rubble.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Oh, man, that's crazy. I actually, against all odds, was pleasantly surprised by the company this week. That's not to say I enjoyed myself, but, you know, you're grading against a pretty interesting curve here where I thought, I don't know what was happening, but I was really having a red hot go at just being like, okay, let's watch this for the first time. And obviously that's impossible. But I don't know. It wasn't as frustrating as I imagined. Like there were a few moments where I got annoyed. I remember like one of the last, or not last things, but something I did do last night. I had a very exciting moment. You know when when Big reveals the beautiful wardrobe he's put in the Heaven on Fifth, and Carrie says double doors, very nice. Yeah. I just had this overwhelming, like in my mind, I painted such a vivid picture, just this overwhelming urge for the doors to open, and he hasn't actually installed this beautiful walk-in wardrobe. What he's done is he's just put double doors in front of just a sheer drop, 33 floors straight down to Fifth Avenue. So it's mm-hmm. just like he has installed the most dangerous set of double doors in the world in their apartment. No wardrobe, just big, going out on his own, saying, it's my house, I bought it, this is what I want to put in. And just the sort of difference that would make to the rest of the movie, because I don't know that it's not a fight that they wouldn't get over, but certainly would put a spanner in the works in terms of marriage. I mean...
It sounds like she might die.
No. She doesn't step out. The door's open. She steps as though she's like, oh my gosh, this wardrobe, and then just steps up to this sheer drop. And sort of does like a whoa, you know, like arm spinning, you know, when you lose
balance.
Like
Sonic the Hedgehog when you go up to an edge or
a ledge
rather.
Yeah. And just the idea of this sort of new character lurking in the background of every scene inside of that tremendous penthouse. I mean, it would damage the resale value, no doubt. It would break all sorts of construction laws. But I don't know. I mean, if they've got so much money, start having a bit of fun with it. Don't put a wardrobe in your house. Do something exciting. Do something new.
Yeah, this feels dangerous, and like there's not a huge amount of payoff is the only thing.
You don't like the idea of having... like it's like the wardrobe in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that takes you through to Narnia. Only instead of going to Narnia, it's just a sheer drop. And I can't emphasize how sheer this drop is, Tim. You look down, just straight down.
90 degrees, just a...
When I was visualizing it last night, it was so vivid in my mind. I had that fearful sensation you get when you're up high and you go, whoa, like, I just want to see this really sheer drop, just 33 floors. I could say it all day. Of course, that wasn't what happened. He had installed a wardrobe. And
Don't shy away from this because I want to stay in this. Is part of the allure for you the possibility that someone actually could drop down there, or is it just sort of the visuals?
I mean, if we want to, it's both. The visuals certainly are arresting, but I think if we want to break down the psychology of it, I suppose there is an underlying notion that either one of the characters or myself could wind up stumbling through the double doors to our grisly demise. And I guess, you know, in some sense or, you know, way, that there is appeal in that idea to me, which suggests mm-hmm. that the rosy watch that I was describing earlier has in fact opened up some pretty dark passageways in my mind.
No, that's okay, because I think coping mechanism is the word you used before, and I think that's right. And this is what the human psyche will naturally do. When faced with some pretty oppositional circumstances, it will go, okay, I can't change this. What I can change is myself. So what you've done is you've managed to kind of judo flip the movie and insert your own fun in there. And if that's what you need to get you through, I'm here for you. I support you. And I think you're doing a great job.
Well, you know, thank you. And it does change that last reunion scene towards the end of the movie when they both go to the apartment to pick up the shoes, because instead of having a beautiful like moment where they realize the error of their ways and that they are meant for each other at the end of the film, what we've got is a double suicide.
Yes, I see. There's something about, and this is probably my Marxism showing a little bit, but there's something beautiful about the visuals of that sort of thing transpiring on Fifth Avenue, because isn't that like a real center of wealth on Manhattan?
It would be, I mean, it would upset a few commuters and presumably, you know, rubbernecking tourists. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want that to happen to the characters. That would be a disaster.
Absolutely
but
not.
What I am looking for is ways that this movie can deviate. And for better or worse, it's what I came up with.
Yeah.
I think that stems from... I got really cross... I'm sure we've done it before, but when... You know, after that big wedding photo shoot when that song by... Who's singing that song? The Fergie ripoff of Glamorous or whatever. Ciara,
is that
I think.
The
click, flash.
Click.
Yeah.
Click.
And
flash.
Carrie's
clothes.
Yeah, yeah. Carrie's wearing all sorts of different wedding dresses. And then, it transitions to her and her apartment and saying, and then the impossible happened. And then it's a message from Vivienne Westwood saying, I saw you in the dress. This is your dress. And I was just like, in the world of the film, this is not the impossible. Carrie has literally been handed everything she could reasonably want from the outset of this movie. There has been no challenge, no hardship. We're just watching a character just have...
That's a good point. You've brought up the thing about the dress before, but what you've just said there is right. In a movie, you want to see someone doing something. But Carrie, who is the central protagonist here, doesn't do anything. Things just sort of seem to happen to her, and the things are quite nice, except for being stood up at the altar. But that's kind of it.
But prior to that, it's like, in her world, there is nothing unlikely or impossible about Vivian Westwood giving her a dress. She just bought a penthouse apartment on Fifth Avenue. She's engaged to the man of her dreams. She's maintaining these friendships with her three core friends, even though they appear to have less and less in common.
She's a Vogue model all of a sudden.
Yeah, and then... exactly, yeah, she's a Vogue model now. And then it's like... And then, I don't know, it's sort of that faux... Faux modesty. Mm. It's like, just acknowledge that your life's going great. Don't say, and then the impossible happened. And you go, yeah, and then, because I was on a real fucking tear, I got a free dress. And if Vivian Westwood thinks I'm posting a hashtag spawn post on Instagram, she's fucking mistaken. I'm taking this one for free. I mean, the whole movie's hashtag spawn, hashtag ad, hashtag insta-love. Oh.
You know what struck me this week was the sheer amount of Starbucks in it. Because I never really... they did a good job, I guess. It's so wedded into the fabric of the film that I didn't really notice it as standing out like I would with an Adam Sandler movie. Because it was pretty in the DNA of the film. But there's so much Starbucks in this.
Yeah. What are the other products you've noticed? To me, it's all liquids. Starbucks, Smart Water, Vitamin Water. Those are the trio. The holy trinity of spawn.
It would make sense to me that back then Sex and the City had enough sort of clout and whatever, my vocab's not so great on 2 hours sleep, that Louis Vuitton probably paid for that glorious sort of worshipping at their feet about the bag and whatnot.
Yeah.
Who else? Maybe Sotheby's? Oh, wait, no, what was it? Christie's? The auction house at the start?
Yeah.
Although, that's more of a location, so they probably paid for that. Maybe there was some sort of contra arrangement where they didn't have to pay for the location as long as they'd splash the name around a little bit in the logo.
Yeah, all those fashion houses that she reels off in that wedding photo shoot, that's all spawn, right?
So naked, isn't it? Do you know, this is... I don't know if I should... I probably shouldn't say this on the pod, but I will. I caught up with a mate... Sort of a light mate light yesterday.
An acquaintance.
A strong acquaintance. And that person
I'm very interested in this phrasing.
Yeah, I will let you know who it is afterwards. That person was describing to me, I think, I didn't want to dwell on it because it was kind of awkward, a situation where they are sort of independently wealthy through entrepreneurial pursuits and were talking about buying a scene in a movie. From a pretty well-known New Zealand director, Taika. Not that they had done this or anything, or that they're in conversations with Taika, but like that was their pledge. They were just like, yeah, so I'm going to, because I'm not getting a lot of auditions and stuff, so what I think I'll do is I'll fund a scene and then people can see that I can act. And I was like, what?
I like...
You mean you just throw money at a film so you can be in it, and that's acting now.
But that's great. I mean, what say we transplant that idea, which is absolutely batshit insane.
It's so crazy, eh?
I mean, because like what sort of...
said it like it was the most normal, like every day, this is how films get made. Everyone just buys their scene, their one scene, and you click it all together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Taika specifically, I imagine, is not exactly hard up for cash. Like, I have no idea what the number you would have to offer at which that becomes undeniable. But... What say we transplant this concept of buying screen time as a showreel? Where would you insert yourself into Sex and the City, and what would you be doing in your scene?
I mean, there's so much of myself that just wants to pay to be a walk-on spot and fuck up the shot, but disallow them from having any other takes so they have to use it. So I'm just barreling the camera at the back while Big's on one knee in a Starbucks or some shit.
And they have to use one of your takes because you've paid such a hefty amount of money.
exactly. Do you know what I'd enjoy actually as well, be a bit of me, is being one of the interviewed assistants for Carrie, like another Peter Kim of PeterKim.com fame.
Yeah.
A version of that. Like, and I'd come in, I think because not enough people have an idea of like a super stereotypical New Zealander, so I'd go Aussie and I'd attempt a very broad Australian accent and wear a cork hat. And I think I'd really pop off the screen.
I mean, it's your showreel to use how you want, so I respect that. I feel like you're not maximizing it. Do you know my one? I think would be I would pay to feature in every scene that is set in a coffee house, and my role would be I'd just be frantically running around the background of frame, flipping over tables and asking everyone if they knew where Coffee Guy was. And so anytime the gals are out for a meal or whatever, you just see this character in the background just tearing through the cafe. Oh,
I love that.
And I mean, I imagine if not, making me necessarily more employable for future jobs, it would certainly leave an impact on screen, on the extras. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of intensity I'd bring to this, I can't even begin to articulate to you, Tim. I would go whole hog.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Every now and then you do get a character or an actor, an actor's portrayal in a film that doesn't fit the rest of the film whatsoever. The one I always think of off the top of my head is The Room. And admittedly, like, that movie's got countless issues with it in a really fun way, but there is a guy in that who looks like he is or he sounds like he's Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, from like a film adaptation of it, and it kind of, it's like he's from a whole other genre of movie and he's just walked off the wrong set into frame in this and started winging lines.
Have you found anyone in Sex and the City like this? Is there anyone this watch that you thought, what are you doing here? Get out of here.
It's actually, for me, the strongest contender would be the woman with the loud glasses who sits behind Samantha at Christie's when she's bidding on the ring. She's not, I don't think she's good at acting, and I think she's so distracting with her big movements and things, and she's right in the center of shot that it feels like she shouldn't be in the movie.
Yeah. She looks like she should be having afternoon tea with my mum, to me. When you described her then, and the picture I have in my mind of her, it's like someone who's performatively reading a magazine.
Yes.
I'm like, I know you're not reading that magazine, Susie, you know?
I imagine Charlotte, your mum, has a very wide array of friends because she is a very magnanimous and magnetic sort of a person, so I imagine she has a
and the great words of
broad sweep of mates,
bonus of the heart, magnetic hot. She's got a far-reaching, you know, assembly of chums. That's just what I think. Should we do some shining lights?
Yeah, could you see that woman in the mix with the other?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, I can see her as she is in that costume with that Auction House magazine, like sort of half engaging with the conversation, half engaging with the magazine, sailing straight through the middle, not quite nailing either.
She feels like a tutter to me, like she tuts a lot.
The sort of friend who, if mum had her over, I'd go into whatever room they were sitting in and say hi for a few minutes, and then even if I didn't actually have anything to do, I'd be like, oh, well, I got to go off and do this. I was quite excited for my shining light this week, Tim, because it's something I've noticed and enjoyed before but never articulated to you. And controversially, it's not even a person. Oh. It's a pen. There is a Sharpie and clipped inside of Carrie's dress and bra strap when they are doing the first wave of wedding planning with Charlotte and Anthony.
I see it every watch.
I've seen it before, and I've never paused to just say how much I love this pen. I love the idea of keeping a pen there. Like, I love the idea of people having pens on their person, especially in places that I can't have them. And I love having a pen on me. I've always got a pen on me. I mean, I might not write anything down all day, but I've always got the option. And it shows up week in, week out. We don't give it its due credit. It's a fantastic pen. It's a great piece of costuming. I mean, and it's a beautiful spot where costuming and props cross over. And, you know, it's probably one of the stronger collaborations in the film. And so when I saw that pen show up, I thought, yeah, hell yeah.
Man, 1,000% I'm with you on that. I've seen that pen several times. And it's a tasteful placement. It's on the inside. It's like when women will put stuff in their bras, like credit cards and stuff, so they don't have to leave home with a big heavy wallet. It's just a very practical, pragmatic. It adds to the scene. I really like, I believe it, and it adds stuff. Sorry, my speech is a bit disjointed. I am getting messages on this phone, and some of them seem important, so I'm just putting my phone on Do Not Disturb so that I can hide myself from the world now.
That's right.
It doesn't intervene. But that pen's a fucking strong contender for best supporting, I think, in this movie. Why don't we have Academy Awards each watch?
For best supporting prop?
Just a whole plethora of awards. Let's give some awards away. It's kind of like a shining light style positive segment idea where we can roam around finding something to celebrate each time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the winner is for best supporting prop this week in the 7th watch
hey,
of Sex in the City.
27th, congratulations, my friend. First step down the mountain.
Ah, we're in the 27 club now. I might die in the next couple of days before the next watch.
Anything's possible.
Oh, we're watching tomorrow, aren't we? Fucking hell. Oh. Oh, my Lord. This is so bad, man. Fuck, this is so bad. I can't even fucking describe the state I was in last night watching. I was in such a state. There's no other word for it. Bleary-eyed, exhausted, just receiving radiation from a tablet an inch away from my fucking face, trying to make sense of tiny red, green, and blue pixels attempting to communicate romance to me. It is so fucked. I'm coming apart at the seams.
You really are. I mean, you're wearing a singlet today, which I think looks fantastic, but sort of speaks to
a man
in crisis.
Boy uniform.
Yeah.
I haven't had a shower. I look terrible, as you can. We're actually on video Skype today, which is rare. I do love this singlet, though. I bought it for a hike. I got it at Cotton On, which is, I don't normally shop there. It's one of those dreary fast fashion places where they've got slave labor to construct a cotton t-shirt for $3 for you. But the reason why I love it is I walked in, I saw it, because I didn't have a singlet from a tramp. And it's got a picture of the Capitol building of the United States from Washington, D.C., which I have visited in person. And slathered on top of that image are the words San Francisco in huge bold letters. And I thought, I don't know if that's intentional or not, but that is fucking funny.
It's making you laugh right now, which I enjoy.
It is. It is. It tickles me. It's so good. Hey, guy, have you seen any other like movies lately that you enjoyed?
I refuse to talk about that. Tim, what was your shining light?
Oh, don't be a dick. Don't be a dick. Come on. I'll tell you my shining light. My shining light.
You were so scared just then. Oh, my God.
I wasn't scared.
I felt like I saw into you. The don't be a dick thing. It wasn't like authoritative. It was pleading. It was like, please allow me to have this diversion.
My shining light this week, and it's so weird that I remember it, because last night when I was watching, I was like, fuck, I better write this down because there's no way that I'll recall it in the morning. But I do, crystal clear. It's the moment when Louise from St. Louis and Carrie are going through sort of the to-do list, and Carrie wants to know when they're going to get to unpacking the clothes in her closet, or packing them in, some shit, sorting out the closet.
Yeah.
And Louise says, one thing at a time, when were you going to check these emails? We've got a shot of Carrie, and she does this kind of like half guilty, half resigned face and just sort of shrugs and says, now? And it's, I buy it. I buy it every watch.
That's cool.
Yeah. Do you know the exact moment I'm talking about, friend?
Of course I do.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I don't mind that scene. I find it really cute,
that moment. I find it a really cute little moment from SJP.
I'm noticing that we gravitate towards scenes that are in Carrie's old apartment. I guess that could be related to the idea that these are scenes that it's easier to be invested or believe in, or, you know, transplant yourself into. I do know what you're describing. I think Jennifer Hudson was a breath of fresh air this week. And, I know exactly what you're saying. Because the next thing she does is reads an email from John Preston.
John James Preston.
Heingel Smith. I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was.
Sorry, bud.
No, it's okay, man. I'm not too
worried. I came in with
that
middle name. I've ankle tapped you when you're on a sprint. Not a good thing to do.
Nah. Look.
Hey, guy, just a little update, mate. This seems relevant. I think a hurricane might be coming or something. The weather has changed, instantly. The sky has darkened, and all of a sudden there's a ton of leaves falling. I might check the internet or something, because this feels slightly apocalyptic. Like, it was really hot before, basically, when I started the record. Now the sky is totally grey, and the wind just picked up all of a sudden. It scared my little dog, who's on the other side of the room on a pillow. He's come hung out with me now.
It sounded like someone was trying to get into the studio at one point, that banging noise.
And it's just a big gust of wind. That is freaky, man. It's like a little tornado.
Well, the wind is crazy, isn't it? Because you can't see the wind. You can see the impact of the wind, but that's different from seeing the wind.
You know, have you got your computer on you?
I'm on my computer.
You do me a favor, you look up the weather for Auckland?
Sure thing, Tim. I'll look up the weather for Auckland.
Thanks, mate. What else to say about the watch last night? Who did I like? No one is the answer to that.
That can't be true.
I appreciated Steve, but I didn't like anyone.
I thought Brady was a real shit actor this week.
That's very rude of you. He's a child.
Yeah, try harder. What you're looking at, Tim, you are looking...
Is there a hurricane warning or anything?
No hurricane warning, but there are gusts, and you're about to experience some pretty intense showers until early afternoon.
Thank you.
Not a problem. It's a subtropical storm. It's going to stay warm.
What do you think of Magda? We never talk about Magda.
Yeah. I like her. She kind of like... I like her because I like the way that she's represented, and I like that she sort of... I feel like she mumbles to herself, and Miranda and Steve are so swept up in their own lives and problems that they don't catch a lot of what she's saying, but she's dropping bombs. She's funny. She's got really firm opinions on these people. Like, they've so let her into their lives, and she's such a part of the fabric of their day-to-day that they've almost forgotten that she has total autonomy over her mind and thoughts, and that she is observing the things they do, and she's making some pretty harsh judgments.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? When you get rich enough to have full-time help, like a nanny for childcare or a cleaner who's in your house, like a lot of the time, I don't know if this is real life or just kind of a trope. I, as a poor person, will never know the joy of having like a full-time nanny or cleaner, I don't think. But yeah, their autonomy starts to slip away in your own head. And it is it's a cool little rebellious thing that she's like, these guys, they're no good.
Yeah,
fuck
yeah.
These guys. I'm going to talk about it a little
when
bit.
When she takes Brady to the bathroom, like when they're in that first Italian restaurant scene, she sort of starts, she goes, I'm going to wash your beautiful face. But then yeah. I feel like as they're walking, I'd love the camera to just pick up and get off Steve and Miranda for a moment and just follow them in. Because I wouldn't be surprised to hear her sort of whispering, not outright like slander or things to alienate Brady from his parents, but certainly the opening statements, planting, sowing the seeds of discontent to try and, you know, exercise. I mean, and I understand why, you know, because in a sense, Brady is her child as well. She spends the most time with him during these formative years. I wouldn't be surprised to see whatever her own dealings or plans for the world, the city, her life are, her to sort of cross-pollinate those with Brady, in whom she probably sees and is training quite a powerful young ally.
Do you see it as a Splinter and Ninja Turtle style relationship of the sort of sensei parent figure imbuing them with martial arts powers?
Somewhat, although I do think down the line there is scope for Brady to rebel in a way that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles never do against Splinter. I think
that would be a good series, right? You know, because I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles started as comic book characters originally, and it would be a cool little series, like, you know, how Batman has the Dark Knight, just a little divergent series of the boys rebelling against Splinter. That would be a fun story to pursue, especially if Splinter was in the right the whole time, but maybe the Turtles couldn't see the bigger picture.
Of course. I mean, but it's only natural. I mean, you know, they squabble with each other, these Turtles, but for teenagers, they are remarkably deferential towards authority. They really do respect the hell out of Splinter. And I think Brady does feel like that way about Magda right now.
Turtles are different ages, eh?
Who's to say, man? I do. I like Magda. And I'm glad you asked, because she doesn't get her due credit in the film nor on the podcast.
What nationality do you think Magda is?
What, Ukrainian?
No. She just says that when I first came, this was the old
Ukrainian area. Yeah.
Neighborhood. Do you think she's from Ukraine?
Absolutely. Where do you think she's from?
I want to say Ukraine because I think it would be fun. Cool that she got out. I wonder what her opinions on Putin would be. Probably not good, I imagine.
I've just Googled her. There's a 2018 interview with Cosmopolitan.
Very cool.
Which does not look insignificant. In which she says she's 84 now. The actor.
Holy smokes.
Veteran theatre actress Lynn Cohen. She first appeared in a season 3 episode, memorably replacing Miranda's vibrator with a statue of the Virgin Mary and telling her that she needs to learn to cook if she ever wanted a boyfriend.
This rings a bell.
This is the sort of backstory. I mean, this is why the movie gets to prop itself up and slap us in the face twice a week, because that's a funny storyline. That's really
Absolutely.
Good fun. That is really good fun.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit more of that in the film, please. What are any other lovely tidbits there?
Lynn, now 84, says that Magda was only supposed to appear in that one episode, but eventually returned in season 4 and throughout the rest of the series and both movies. There's nothing like Sex in the City, says Lynn. I've never done another show like that where I found a dildo, although I'm still ready to find another dildo at another time.
That's awesome. Good on you, Lynn.
Yeah.
So is she American herself and it's just an accent that she's putting on by the looks of things?
Yeah, she's from Kansas City, Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah. On Magda's importance to the series, Lynn says it showed a woman of a different age who was smart as the devil, very bossy, and also understood sexuality, and they needed that. It enlarged the canvas on which they were working, and they would not have a typical old lady moulding away in some retirement home somewhere, but a woman who worked and didn't suffer fools. I say as an actress, you're never any better than the person you're working with, and I was working with the best in Cynthia. So I must have been pretty damn good.
Aw, that's so sweet. And I like that she's big up seeing both of them. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. They really pissed away so much goodwill that they built up through the series.
Well, like, I mean,
it really is a tragedy.
Our relationship is so unshakably poisoned and broken to it because they didn't build that. We didn't build that goodwill with the series. The series didn't build that goodwill with us. We just kicked the door down and said, hey, what the fuck's going on in here? And they said, well, we're making a movie, and if you want to enjoy it, there's about 10 years of context that would really help you along the way. We said, no, we're cool. We'll just watch the movie.
It's like judging a suburban party of, like, you know, neighbors getting around hanging out by the orgy that happens at 2 a.m. that you walk in on. It's like, no, you've missed Monopoly. You've missed several bottles of wine. Some old records that have been passed around, maybe a doobie or two for old time's sake, and, you know, a lot of revelations about people being curious in their existing relationships and wanting to just kick the tires on that a little bit.
There's a lot
you can't judge it just by the orgy alone.
You can't judge an orgy by its... No, it doesn't quite work, but I know what you're saying. There's a lot of context here.
Yeah, exactly.
Tim...
Should we check in with Steve briefly?
Yeah, I suppose we should. Steve doesn't want to bother these people, or so he says. But would a man who doesn't want to bother anyone take his shirt off and reveal a Z etched across his chest in the form of Zorro?
Oh.
That's right. Antonio Banderas has taken a peyote trip and is running around New York City with the actual prop from the Legend of Zorro and marking literally anyone he comes across. Steve... I don't know why in this particular moment, but he has an aversion to authority. He has an aversion to getting the police or anyone involved. He turns to the only people he knows. He says, I don't want to bother you people, but Antonio Banderas is freaking out right now, and I really need your help.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I'm sorry. Do you think he's bleeding out or it's super clean?
He's going to bleed out.
Okay, all right. Well, that's probably about enough of that. Any other business we need to tend to?
Come and watch me doing comedy. I was part of the problem before we were talking about it. Happening in Australia and New Zealand right now. Just Google Guy Montgomery and whichever Australian or New Zealand city is relevant to your placement in the world. And hopefully there'll be tickets available. I'm funny. It's good.
If you go to littleempirepodcast.com/live, we've got everyone's shows on there. I think I've got all your shows on there, Monty.
Hey, nice.
Pretty sure. So check that out. You can also buy tickets for Worst Idea of All Time coming to Melbourne to do a live show. I imagine we'll probably do one during the New Zealand Comedy Fest as well, but deets will be later down the track for that. And I'm gonna do it, Guy. Now you will be hearing the Radio New Zealand interview between myself and Jesse Mulligan checking in on me after I tweeted out to the world despair about this project. Thanks for listening. Thank you in particular to those who support us on Patreon. You guys make this possible. Love you. And here's that chat.
Watching the same terrible film each week for a year sounds like torture. But for New Zealand comedians Tim Batt and Guy Montgomery, it is the basis of their aptly titled podcast, The Worst Idea of All Time, which they record each week. If this is ringing bells, we have chatted about it before on the show, previous seasons. Tim Batt, one of the podcast hosts, joins me now. Hi there, Tim.
Hey there, Jesse. How you doing?
Great, thanks. Year one was a movie called Grown Ups 2.
Correct.
What was year two?
Year two was Sex and the City 2, movie.
Yeah. Year three?
Year three, we did a Zac Efron film, which was supposed to be a vehicle for him and his artistic miracle, We Are Your Friends, which holds several records for its lack of box office performance, lost a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah. And what are you doing this year?
We're looking down the barrel of season four. We're actually midway through it right now, doing two watches every single week of Sex and the City 1. We thought that'd be a fun twist on it because we've already done the second film.
Oh, yeah. Twice a week. And when did you begin?
We began just before Christmas. Okay. But it turns out the twist wasn't so fun as it was. I feel like a lot of cries for help are going out at the moment. My mental shape is not good.
Yeah, that's the reason I've got you on the show, because I saw your tweet last night saying that you didn't know if you thought you could do it anymore. I'm worried about
you. Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out as well. It's important that we all look after each other out there, and I did. I sort of sent a bit of a distress flare on Twitter saying that I didn't know I could watch it one more time. I've already watched it 26 times so far inside one calendar year, and it's bringing me down, man. But this is the agreement. This is what we signed up for the podcast.
Where are you calling us from, Tim? It's extremely loud behind you.
It is, and I apologise for that. It's the sound of progress. I'm actually inside of Britomart, and you're hearing the, I think, the CityLink rail network being constructed around me. So my apologies for that, but it gives it a nice sense of atmosphere, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's a good. So now, Sex and the City 2, which was a couple of years ago that you were watching that was a famously bad film, but I don't seem to recall Sex and the City, the original, being so reviled by pundits and viewers. Is it a terrible film, or is it just not for you?
Here's the thing about that. I think the television series had built up so much goodwill by being legitimately groundbreaking, really funny, really well written, and having this phenomenal ensemble cast of all women, which was a pretty novel concept in the 90s, that a lot of that goodwill carried over to the first film. So I think a lot of people overlooked how atrocious it was. As depressed as I am to be watching the first one over and over again at the moment, the second movie is still worse, but the first movie is a undeniably terrible piece of cinema.
Mm. And the reason you're doing this, well, you might be able to tell me some other reasons, but the primary reason is that you're making a podcast, and it's quite fun for other people to watch you suffer week after week. Tell us something about the success of the podcast so far.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't ask in that run of questioning on going, why are you doing this? Because we still haven't got a good answer for that. But whatever the rationale was, we have managed to clock up over 10 million downloads.
Wow.
I've managed to go over to the States about four times now, doing live shows and podcast conventions. We've been to Los Angeles, New York, Portland, Oregon, lots of fun places like that. We actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but it was a little while ago now, we made a pilot for a TV show version of the podcast with YouTube.
Wow.
They decided the idea was not for them after they spent a considerable amount of money funding the pilot.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a success in its own right, even if it doesn't get picked up, to have that sort of backing. Now, tell me...
You know what's a better success, though? Getting a TV show.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, you've had your own TV show. It's not all it's cracked up to be.
Oh.
What?
You know that it's lots of fun, though. Come on.
What is the worst thing about watching Sex and the City, the movie, twice a week?
So the thing is, it's quite unique now because Guy Montgomery has moved to New York City. He's relocated himself. My best pal in the world, my comedy partner, my comedy wife, he's gone abroad to chase his dreams. And as a result, both of us are now watching the movie totally in isolation.
Uh-huh.
So the time zone's really tricky. And what's happening most of the time is I wake up at 7 a.m. and just have to start watching this film.
It's a terrible way to start the day.
Yeah, it's terrible. It really takes the shine off the whole day. And it's the only possible time slot where New York can sync up with New Zealand. So it's grim. It makes for a really grim start to the day.
Oh, so you have to watch it at the same time. Are you on Skype or something?
No, we've got these arbitrary rules that we like to try and follow as much as we can. So I think it makes for a better product if people can hear us immediately coming off the back of the watch, so it's still raw. It's sort of for accuracy of capturing our emotional state, so it's unfettered.
So what's the worst thing about the film and about watching it, other than the time zone and the non-ideal viewing conditions? What is it about the film that's wearing you down?
Jesse, without question, it's the length. The film is 2.5 hours. I've actually watched it so many times now that I've been able to pinpoint there's a movie at the film that I think comes at 1 hour 42, where if they stopped the movie right then and rolled the credit, it would actually be quite a great ending, but they've tacked almost a full another hour onto the movie. It is insanity.
Wow. And were you serious that you're not sure if you can keep it up?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, we really went through depths of despair that I wasn't used to or had experienced before when we were watching Sex and the City 2, and that was only once a week. Now we've ramped up the intensity by doing two watches every week. Admittedly, the movie is slightly not as bad, but it's a pretty low bar to be able to pass. So, I don't know. We're at the midway point now, man, and it's not feeling great. It's not feeling great at all.
We believe in you. You've got lots of fans out there. And look, there's most people listening probably don't enjoy their job all of the time. This is your job. Think of it like a job. Think of it as like the first couple of hours a day when you could be in an office sat next to someone you can't stand and someone's just heated up their fish curry in the microwave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. And that is how I'm trying to frame it in my head. And the flip side of it is we do get a huge amount of mail from people all over the world who listen, who go, hey, I listen to your podcast while I'm doing my PhD research, while I'm driving to work for 2 hours, while I'm doing this menial job that I don't really like. And it's nice to know that our suffering is bringing a dispersed amount of joy out there on the globe. So it almost makes it worth it, but I don't know if it's quite at the threshold.
Nice to talk to you, Tim. The podcast is called The Worst Idea of All Time, if you'd like to listen to it. And thanks for your time today.
Thank you for reaching out, Jesse. I appreciate it.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.